I very much enjoy Josh's content, and I very much respect him as a creator and a broadcaster. But I can tell you that Josh does not speak for me at any point of this podcast so that I can continue with my work.
You're not going to get any in-depth analysis as to why I think Bortoleto will end up fading into the stock car Brazil scene. You're not going to hear about what I reckon is the future for Rafael Villagomez, or why I think some certain corners will be reprofiled on the Albert Park circuit. But you do know that blue cheese is goated, so at least we have that.
That is why I came on the pod. I'm going to start that again because that is unlistenable nonsense. Right.
Welcome and good day to the Feeder Series podcast. It's a confusing week for junior single seater racing after F1 somehow matched the chaos levels that F2 and F3 always see. I'm your host, Jim Kimberley, and although I can't explain how to navigate a world where F1 can be as crazy as F3, I have two top tier guests who might be able to shed some light on this unusual phenomenon. Phenomenon, that's the way to say it, right? First up, let me introduce a name. I'm thrilled.
Dangerous word to go for in the intro, Jim.
It was.
Dangerous
word. So before before we go properly into it, let me introduce a name. I'm thrilled and honored to welcome back to the podcast. Interrupting me as he does just then to go for the dangerous words. He's a long-term voice of Feeder Series and now justifiably becoming the voice of F1 too, in my opinion. Excellent commentary on F1 TV, excellent commentary on UK's Channel 4 highlights. It's a shame it's not the full race, but that's a whole other conversation. Welcome back to the podcast, as Josh Revel bows down. Alex Jakes, firstly, congratulations on your wedding late last year. And secondly, how jet lagged do you feel, even though you spent your weekend in London?
Yeah. I mean, that is the great thing about it, isn't it? No travel, no wonderful visit to Melbourne's one of Formula One, now Formula Two, Formula Three's favourite stops on the calendar, and yet it was up all night. Listen, it's not a proper job, so I can't possibly complain about anything. It's a dream job, and sometimes dream jobs come with crazy hours, and as a result of that, I can't complain in any way, although I might have done at fair points, especially waking up at midnight. But I'm not going to complain on this podcast because it was a ridiculous set of hours. It was wake up at midnight or go to work through the door at midnight and leave at 9, 10 a.m. But hey, we had a great weekend, so who cares?
Well, let's talk about people who aren't doing a real job, because if you thought having one guest who's paid to talk at length on the podcast was enough, you're absolutely right. But I still invited one more name who can monologue for their nation. Josh Revel, you're back once again. And as we alluded to in the TRS/frock, I don't know what we end up saying it was these days. Let's go with TRS episode. This is a guest that you were quite excited to be talking about or talking to.
Yes.
And that never came off in the F2 preview episode, but
it took me a week to recover from that great disappointment.
Tell me, right now you're getting to chat to Alex Jakes, and you had F2 and F3 on at a reasonable hour in New Zealand. Can 2023 only go downhill from here?
Well, it did go downhill in that whole presence as the captain, the leader of the Franco Colapinto fan club. I tell you what, it was one weekend where it was just like, this could end now, but it just got worse as the weekend went on. But all that for a little further in the podcast, I believe.
Very, very well done, Josh. You could do the hosting duties for me. Before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, please like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or leave a rating or review if you're listening on Spotify or another podcast platform, any preference that you've got. But if you happen to be listening on Spotify or watching on YouTube, you can take part in the podcast polls that we've been running. With the recording dates between our Fred Vesti and Gabriel Bortoleto episodes switching around a little bit, I have two results to give you this week. Firstly, we asked where you thought Vesti would finish in the F2 standings this year, and 49% of YouTubers went for P4 or lower, while 50% of Spotify listeners chose Peak 3. Not the news Mr. Vesti would want to hear, but he may be heartened by the answer to our Driver of the Weekend in Saudi Arabia in the Bortoletto episode, where 42% of YouTubers and 43% of Spotify listeners chose a Danish driver as their pick after his feature race win. This week, though, it's a simple yes or no question I'm posing. Do you think F2 and F3 should return to Australia after this wild weekend of action? Check our YouTube channel or scroll down on the episode if you're listening on Spotify to cast your vote. I'll read out the results in the next episode. And while you're there, if you haven't rated or subscribed, don't be a manus. Please take the 10 seconds to do so. It really does help us out. Okay, Formula 2, let's start. There's no lack of things to talk about then, chaps. I suppose I'll start with a question I just asked the audience. Alex, safety car galores, one in Ooh. F2 lasting, I think you said over 10 minutes, and F3 yeah. didn't fare much better. We'll talk about the races in depth in a moment, but do you think these support championships should be racing at Albert Park after what we saw this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they should be racing at Albert Park. And bear in mind that, you know, it's messed with my week getting on Aussie time. I'm going to have another week getting off Aussie time. And yeah, of course they should be racing at Albert Park. I mean, it's the expansion of the championships. We actually talked in commentary a little bit about it with Alex Brundle, where they're going to have to make the step up to these tracks anyway if they're going to make Formula One. We talk about it being the road to Formula One all the time. You cannot just therefore go racing at Imola and the Circuit de Catalunya, Barcelona all the time. You're going to have expansionist rounds. And the great thing about it in the past is we've gone racing in Malaysia, obviously Bahrain for years, Abu Dhabi as well. And to that, I just think it's an excellent addition. And listen, it's a street circuit with Formula 2. You knew you were going to see Bert Mailander strutty stuff out there. That was guaranteed. So yes, is the simple answer that I could elucidate on for hours more. But yes, they should go back.
Same question for you, Josh. Personally, I'm all for it. I love chaos and I love unpredictability, but I do understand people's concerns when you spend half the race watching something that feels like Formula 4 with safety cars out for about 15 minutes. So same question, Josh. Do you think we should be going back to Melbourne?
Oh, you love chaos. You're an agent of chaos, are you?
I've got you two on the podcast, clearly.
Yeah, you just love the idea of flying carbon fiber pieces, although a Merck fan in the grandstand near where Magnussen went off would not agree with you there. No, I mean, honestly, I think there were some concerns heading into, Aussie getting these rounds. I think the first thing on everyone's lips was, how much is this going to cost when you keep on talking about cost cutting? And all of a sudden you're going off to the other side of the world. Like, whatever. I mean, it's like, we're talking about millions of bucks here, a season. What is a couple 10,000 more, whatever. I don't know. I'm not good with math. Anyway. Yeah. In terms of racing, I thought the nature of the circuits might lend itself to some good stuff. And we got some good stuff throughout the whole weekend. And especially in F3, it's just like, this is awesome. I'm loving this. Formula 2 was fantastic as well. If you were to cut out a lot of the times where Bird Mindlander was just burning fuel in that Merc, you know, it was like a lot of the time you're like, this is great stuff, you know. And if this was to continue, then yeah, absolutely, I want to see these guys back at Albert Park, you know, because you know you place them on the best circuits for racing, and we're gonna get some great stuff. So yeah, I'm hoping they do return.
My lovely girlfriend says, how long is this podcast going to be? And I said, well, we're scheduled an hour or so, but I've got Josh Revel on.
And Alex Jake, so about 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
However long a Peter Jackson movie is ever going to be.
Yes. Welcome to the extended cut.
Well, question one down, and I think we're taking about half an hour already. Question two, turning our attention to the racing, and the Ralph Boschung era of domination is finally over, and Ayumu Iwasa is our new championship leader. Extremely challenging conditions to qualify in, with the Albert Park lake seeming like it spilt over onto the track by Friday evening. And yet, Iwasa got pulled by 6 temps, somewhat helped by the red flag that Victor Marzan triggered. But Alex, how was his weekend, do you think? And should Yuki Tsunoda be worrying about his seat at this point?
Not just Yuki Tsunoda, mate. I think they're both going to be looking over his shoulders at AlphaTauri. You know how Red Bull feel about contract lengths. It's nice to have it written down, and sometimes it's completely irrelevant. Awas is doing really well. He knows that if he's going to get the promotion, he's going to have to win the title. The downside for being with the Red Bull program is if you don't perform, you get launched out of it. The upside is they have a tried and tested path to Formula One. And that is the great advantage of being with that program. So you have to deliver. And he is, I mean, we spoke about it in commentary. In Jeddah, he won a race where he had no right to. And to be honest, I'm slightly surprised that he was able to hold off the field. And I think if that had been around in the latter stages of the championship, I think you would have had a pass. But I think they're always exercising a bit of caution in Jeddah because it's such a high-speed circuit. But if you win races when you're not the fastest car this year, it is the Formula 2 equivalent of a football six-pointer. You are gaining so many points because it's ultra competitive. Anytime you turn a fourth into a first, which is what I think he did that day, all right, it's only a sprint race, but psychologically that gives the team a boost, that gives the engineers a boost, that gives his belief a boost. And I believe that's what we saw across the Albert Park weekend. That pole performance, very impressive. That feature race, masterful. I don't think he ever looked like losing it.
Do you really think he needs to win the championship to get to the AlphaTauri seat next year? Or do you think it's a championship challenge? And if he's there or thereabouts come the end of Abu Dhabi, that's enough? Because talking about Yuki Tsunoda, he didn't win the championship.
No, it's true. But I feel like Yuki was coming from such a low expectation base from Formula 3 into Formula 2. He basically didn't figure. Well, he had the one win in Formula 3 and he was inside the top 10 in the championship. And then he
two rookie seasons in a row.
Yeah, so, and, you know, he comes in from Formula 4, rookie season, Formula 3, rookie season, Formula 2, rookie season. And it just shows you that the perception there is massive. The perception for Iwasa is he's got to be a championship challenger. You're right. I think that's a good clarification. If he's 10 points back from the championship winner in third place, then I don't think it would change things. But I think they'll be quite exacting about who they put in the AlphaTauri, purely because AlphaTauri I've taken a bit of a slip back personally with that team. So the risk that they can take with a driver has massively decreased. And so I think the bar for him to clear is weirdly slightly higher.
Very good insight. Exactly why I've got you on the podcast. And you talk about boosting the team. And Josh, I've seen two drivers step up into F2 who I expected to drown personally, and they're instead finding their footing far more than they did in F3. Kushmaini and Arthur Leclerc making it a dam's double podium. They've now got silverware from Formula 2 after, I'd say, anonymous F3 campaigns. How do you assess their season so far, and how do you think their time in Australia fared?
Well, I think, you know, with Maini and Leclerc, you know, Maini, like, sort of came in with no expectations around him. I don't think anyone really expected anything of him, partially because, relatively speaking, you know, when you're in F3, to most people, if you're not in contention for the championship, you're not really in the discussion of anything at all. So he wasn't there, even though he wasn't doing anything bad in F3. So to come into Formula 2 with Campos, which, you know, aside from Rio Haryanto's campaign back in, was it 2015 or whatever, they didn't really have very strong campaigns. So, you know, it was a match made in hell in that regard. But, you know, I figured it's just like, oh, Kush can pedal a car. So, you know, just give him time. I mean, you got to give drivers time in Formula 2 because it's a radically different beast than F3. A radically different beast, or as some drivers I've talked to said, radically different boat. But, you know, it is something where you got to give the driver time, but if they can shine early, then that's great. And I think Kush has so far been pretty good. Give him a few more rounds, get settled in, he'll be mustard. It'll be fantastic. And especially going up against Boshong in the same team, got the experience, especially with the team, not a bad peddler himself. So to be up where he is so far is fantastic to see, and kind of vindication for those who thought, okay, you know, going to give him a shot. As for Arta, I have been opinionated in what I think of him.
You have opinions?
No, you wouldn't believe it, wouldn't you? No, it's a case.
You've got to pay the bills, Josh, haven't you? You've got to pay the bills.
Got to pay the bills. You got to have an opinion, even if it's totally wrong. So yeah, say la vie, here I am. But yeah, with Arta, you could tell he always had a bit of speed on his side, and it was fun to see when it lasted. You know, there too many instances where he'd be flying backwards through the gravel with less parts on his car than when it went out on him, which is a somewhat unhealthy tactic of going about a race. You know, and really what I would have liked to have seen from Leclerc is more consistency, you know? I think it did hamper his previous 2 years in Formula 3. He seems to have gotten a handle on that relatively. I mean, there were times where he would make a lunge where it's like, this was never going to pay off. But, you know, he's in a good team. Dams can provide a damn good car. And, you know, Iwas is a tough cookie to go up against. You know, I want to continue to preach to everyone that AlphaTauri's best option, if they want to get rid of one of their drivers, and I know Marco, it's been a while since he's got rid of a driver, and I know he's itching for that mid-season swap. You know, I want to preach that it is Liam Lawson who's the best chance for that seat, but Iwasa is continuing to add to his repertoire and about how he can be. You know,
do we have a Liam Lawson Klaxon that we can sell?
I think every episode is a Liam Lawson Klaxon, Josh Reynolds.
I'm just amazed that it took us 34 minutes to get to Liam.
As am I, mate. As am I. But it was going to come up at some point. You know it does, because it's just, you know, Liam Lawson and TRS, me mentioning them in a podcast. I mean, it's just, you know, it's all baby oil to me. But yeah, like, my point remains the same. Like, I want to preach that line, but Iwas is making it very hard right now to say that, because he's been looking really bloody good so far. But, you know, at the same time, that's what Leclerc's going to go up against. And, you know, again, give it time. I think so far he's showing some decent stuff, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens, I guess. But I'm liking what I'm seeing from Kushmani, especially.
Alex, this was not a question I had planned, but just thinking of what we've got here with Arta, and already I'm off the run plan because of you two doing exactly what I expected.
Let's freestyle it, Jim.
That's all we do on the podcast. But we saw Fred Vesti when he came on, speaking about how delighted he is to go back to Prema after a few years with his championship win with them. And like Vesti, but opposite, I guess. Are we potentially seeing Arta Leclerc leave Prema and find himself in a happier position? Or do we think potentially it's more this car just suits his driving style better? I know we're very early in the season, but
I think it's really interesting to make the point with Arthur Leclerc, because Frederic Vesti, Arthur Leclerc, it's a good comparison. Vesti had an opportunity to go straight to Formula 2 from Formula 3, didn't take it, and then stayed in Formula 3. Formula 3, on a bad weekend, if you've not quite got the pace, is a roulette wheel. You can have a decent qualifying performance. You can be 15th. There's a lot of talent there. So you can get drawn in to the nature of having a 30 car grid and a lot of talent on that 30 car grid. I think Vesti, if you gave him the chance to go back after that first year with Prema, he would do everything he possibly could. He would constantly be harassing Mercedes. He would be looking to find as much budget as possible, and he would find a way to stay with the Prema team, because that's where he performs. That's where he's comfortable. Arthur Leclerc has timed things really nicely to go to Dams. They're in the best form they've been since they were taking drivers to titles.
Happy days for Dams. I'm sorry to do this to you, Alex, after your voice is clearly struggling a little bit, but there is a lot to cover, and I want to give you the final thoughts on F2, because the Australian racing was something. We had Victor Martin's crash on poor Dennis Hauger. We had Porsche bouncing back. Oh. We had the other 50 Red Bull juniors, not called Uwasa, doing pretty well. Anything you think worthy of mentioning that we've missed?
It was thoroughly good entertainment. I don't think it was the most sparkling example of racecraft, but we had some great moves. We had some incredible moves. We're talking about Miney. His late breaking move at turn 11 was superb. I really enjoyed that one. I think Uwasa always looked like he was going to win the feature race. I think Porcher did well to bounce back. That was strong from him. I thought Vesti's attitude when he was on the wrong strategy, wet qualifying session. If that's a dry qualifying session, I think he's easily in the top 10. I think his attitude to carry on pushing on, build that gap, got it up to 5 seconds, could have just written it off and gone. Do you remember Imola last year where Drugovich just knew he was going to be filtered down? Similar situation. Weirdly, on those bad days, the team wants to see a driver not give up. The team will work harder for the rest of the year for a driver that doesn't give up. And I think Vesti staying with that race could pay him back enormously for the rest of the year. And then obviously he got more chaos and was filtered back into contention.
Really good weekend for Vesti. I was going to segue this a bit nicer. You talk about a driver who doesn't give up, but let's move on to Formula 3. And rather than talk about Pepe Marti, who is a driver that clearly doesn't give up, I've set aside around 4 hours for you, Josh Revel, because Franco Colapinto won a sprint race before he didn't. And then he surged forwards in a feature race until he didn't. Let me go and find a book and leave you to it, Mr. Revel.
The silence of pain. oh my goodness gracious, man. I don't know. Like, I got big raps on Colapinto, especially since 2020 TRS. Of course, TRS had to come up.
Lawson done. TRS done.
The Josh Revel bingo has come here. All we need to do is announce certain driver's name, but I'm leaving him in 2019. Anyway, not like big raps on him because I knew what he could do, especially with a team that is not quite as good as the other ones, so to speak. So for him to be in an MP, maybe not the best Formula 3 team, but you know, it's there. He has an opportunity to go for the title this year. Showed good pace throughout the weekend in Melbourne, won the feature race. And it's just like, yes. This guy, he's special. He's a bad man. This is going to be great. Start of the title campaign. Half an hour later, he's disqualified. It's like, oh boy. It's a bit sort of one of those scenarios where when it rains, it pours, you know, in the sport. You always get those scenarios. Then, what was it, race two? Nick's left rear tire, was it? And that was it. He was a passenger from there. So incredibly disappointing given, you know, the pace that he had for him to, you know, be docked of what could have potentially been a great points haul, walks away with nothing. And it could be detrimental toward the title campaign. He may not get it at all. And we're left with the prospect of whoever one of these other ones are to get the title. I don't care. My boy just didn't get it. I'm clearly not a biased person, aren't I? I'm clearly an impartial guy.
Imagine if Liam Lawson was racing him, then you'd be really, really torn.
Oh,
Alex.
Boy, yeah.
Alex, you're not on F3 comms anymore, but I know you're keeping a close eye on it. And my two drivers of the weekend were Gabriel Bortoleto, for obvious reasons, and the guest we had when you were last on the podcast last year, Pepe Marti, is pole position and then a lights to flag win as impressive as gaining what I calculated to be 40 places over the weekend if we go by the final classification. Ooh,
I'm liking that. I'm liking that. See, that's the joy of a 30-car grid. Both are very encouraging for him. The reason that we had sprint races initially introduced and we don't have two qualifying sessions is you're meant to, in the eyes of the championship organizers, show that you can overtake as well as winning dominantly from pole position. Well, as you've just described, Jim, he has managed to do that. He's managed to show fantastic skills through the field. Yeah, really encouraging for him. And I think he'll be the one out there with the most confidence by far. So I think he was on that podcast that we had, and he did have that underlying confidence. Bortoleto, though, looks like the gold standard at the moment. So whilst you can be as confident as you like, if a driver keeps rolling out of the truck and you can't get near them, then what can you do?
I don't know if you would have concentrated enough on F3 at the moment, and that's just because you have so many other duties, especially this weekend, where if you had F3, yeah, I think you really would have been hospitalized if you had to commentate on all those sessions. We had Bortoleto on the podcast, which would be last week's one, I think, as we released them. Mm. I remarked that I saw a driver who was far, far more confident just in himself than he was when we had him on the podcast last year. And you've done this a lot longer than I have, not the same job, but speaking to these drivers, do you see that go onto the track when you have a driver who just seems to be more comfortable in their own skin 1 year to the next?
I call this the George Russell rule, okay? So George Russell has been confident from day one of his existence. He probably sprung into life and thanked the doctor for delivering him, right? But the George Russell rule is, if you have the confidence, if you have the communication ability, if you have the ability to get the team around you, if you have the ability to articulate what you need from the car, that does have a dramatic impact on what you can do in the junior series on the way up. Okay, it just does. Because these are, if you consider the people that are running the teams, they've seen it all before. They have seen drivers come through. They need easy people to work with who are clear and they understand. So to go to your question on confidence, you've got to remember that it's flesh and blood sitting in the cockpit of one of these cars. And they're doing it at ludicrously early ages. Okay, so they're still finding out who they are as people, not to get too deep and philosophical, but not everyone is born with George Russell confidence. Not everyone is born with George Russell articulation. Also, you might be adjusting to the language of the team that you've got around you. So you might be articulating across language barriers as well. When you get that confidence as a person, it can only help the behind the scenes with a team. And as a result, I think that change that you mentioned can only help him on track. Now, the downside to that can be that if you put your shoulders back a little bit too far, you think, hold on a minute, I'm the new Ayrton Senna here. Come on, Brazil, let's get on board. Then it can spring the other way. You can see, you can go too far into the braking zone. You can have needless contact, and you can see weekends unraveling pretty quickly. So you've got to keep an equilibrium, but more confidence is always going to help a driver on track, especially at this level of motor racing.
If you've got the George Russell effect, where it's just about right, I'd call it the Teo Pourchaire Saudi Arabia effect, when you get it too wrong on the other way with late braking, thinking you're a bit better.
That's a mad corner. But even for a corner that's, I mean, they're scrubbing off so much speed. I mean, when you see it down there, you're like, is this really turn one? There's not enough room for a turn one here. What are you talking about? So yeah, I think the Pourchaire scale was just a smidge over in Jeddah.
Just a smidge. I don't know what Ollie Behrman says about that. Josh, when we went through the F3 teams last year, it was in the season review podcast, and we didn't go through them in any preview podcast this year. So as we're only around exactly two rounds into a 10-round championship, 20% the way there, I guess we can just about get away with a preview. So 30 drivers, 10 teams, any names that you'd like to highlight, be it good or bad? I know, as we mentioned before, you have opinions.
Yeah, obviously. Cole Pinto is obviously someone that I rate highly, I think it's fair to say. I also think, you know, because there were a lot of polls running around, especially by you guys, saying, you know, of the three drivers, who would be the best in these teams? And, you know, with Bortoleto, it was someone I think that a lot of people were sleeping on this year. Like, there wasn't a lot of hype around him. I think, you know, people looked at Trident and thought, who are these guys? It's like, some of them do need a bit more recognition, but Bortoleto is not, he's not a slouch, you know, and especially since we saw on the podcast that he's a dude who is coming in with an absolute, you know, heap of confidence on his side. That is what you need as a driver. It's there's so many, the mental aspect in this game is huge, obviously. But he's got the ability to back it up as well. So I was thinking, you know, Trident's a good team. You know, he's a good driver. He's got to be in discussions for us. And apart from some of his manic exploits in Bahrain, he's been good so far. He's been showing his stuff. I would say Zolov is one that I was keeping an eye on, especially after Spanish F4. But obviously, he's got tough teammates at ART, a tough teammate, but, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Very difficult to do a preview when you already sort of know where the form is for a lot of these teams. Yeah. I guess there's no real sort of set. We know who will win the title this year, you know, at least. Not necessarily. There's no sort of, well, this is the guy only, like we are, like we do sometimes get in F3 or F2. All Prima drivers look decent enough for sure. Probably not as star-studded as they have been in the past, but
if they keep away, you know, from good each enough other, they might be fine.
Yes, that would be a nice change of pace to not see them run into each other or cause any problems for each other. I don't know. It's, like I said, very difficult to give a preview when the preview window is already done. But I guess in the end, all I will say is that it's good seeing some drivers, Bortoleto especially, proving their worth when coming into a season where perhaps it was just almost no expectation around them.
Fair enough. A few names I'm surprised you didn't bring up there, Josh, but that's your call. Alex, I would actually pressure you to put some names in because you're not talking about this anymore, so I feel you can be a little bit more biased than you used to be. But the names I was thinking...
Yeah,
Dino Boganovic, Gabriele Mini, these drivers coming up, these glued together in Freca, seeming to be...
I apologize for not mentioning Mini, by the way. I'm sorry. That dude... Oh, boy. I mean, especially in Bahrain. Oh, my God. How did I not mention them? I'm losing it.
When Franco Colapinto gets shafted, you forget.
Oh, he's just all encompassing. He's just all encompassing. Yeah, the brother's special, man.
Well, before you go, Alex, because I think we can segue this quite nice. And the question was, it's a sizable gap before the next round at Imola, and then we have another mad dash of 7 rounds in 10 weeks before the Monza finale a month later. And what I was going to ask was, do you think we'll have a completely different championship picture by the summer from where we are now? Segue to, what drivers might we expect to be up there?
I was going to do a season preview for the 2016 GP2 championship, but never mind. We'll save that for another day. Yeah, I think it will change. I think it will change. To be honest, I think the championship is going to eventually be fought by Boganovic and Gabriel Mini. But that's what I thought at the start. I'm very pleased that we've got other names in the mix as well. You want, for the driver's sake as well, them not just to go, okay, we're fighting each other in Freca, we're fighting each other in 3, we're fighting each other in 2, and then, you know, maybe one of them doesn't make it, because then that's a little bit heartbreaking if you get the promotion. Yes, I think we will, you know, drivers can go back to their teams. You'll get some drivers who are running elsewhere. I think the picture will massively change by Imola, to answer your question. I mean, there are two outliers there to start the year effectively compared to what they're used to for the more traditional venues.
Do you think that makes as big a difference as we fans think it might do, familiarity with the circuit? Because I thought with Albert Park and then Bahrain by some extension, Bortoleto goes there, obviously at Trident, who generally do well, but it's almost a level playing field. And that's where I was really impressed that he outshone some names that you may expect to finish above him. Do you think going to these Freca racetracks will be more beneficial for those who have raced a lot of laps there.
Completely, completely. When, I mean, there's a lot of talk this weekend, wasn't there, about the practice time that Formula 3 and Formula 2 get. But when it's 45 minutes, okay, if you're with a proven team, if you're with a Prema or you're with a Trident, they're going to have a great baseline setup. If you already know the championship from Frecca, then you're going to be in a, you're going to be in an excellent, you're going to be in an excellent situation. So I think it will swing the pendulum back towards the drivers with experience at those circuits.
Time will tell. Final words on F3 in Australia, Josh, your neck of the woods almost. Similar to what I said with Alex on F2, we had various storylines we've not really touched about, like Zach O'Sullivan bouncing back after a very tough Bahrain opener. Gregoire Saucy, the only F2 or F3 driver to have scored points in every race. Gabriel Aminy and Dino Baganovic, like we've mentioned a little bit, continuing their rivalry, and now they're equal on points. They just seem to be glued together. Any key takeaways from F3 in Australia from your point of view, Josh?
Well, from a championship point of view, I think, yeah, we're not really getting a full picture here, of course. Like, there's definitely going to be some jumbling of the order because, you know, with familiarity of circuits, Alex is completely right here. You know, you got to think that these Prema guys, I mean, Zach's been in the series since last year, but, you know, Dino and Aaron, they were in Frecca last year and they're going into a horde of circuits that they were at with the same team as well. So, you know, that's got to count for something. And, you know, Prema will always, you know, provide as good a baseline as any other team, you know, to better prep their drivers. So they're going to come into the equation. And as we know, one bad weekend can completely destroy your chances. I talked about how Bortoleto is proving his worth, and he is, but I also cruelly see him as a person who would prosper in stock car Brazil rather than Formula One. So I don't know. I sort of think, you know, we do have these drivers sometimes where they shine in the first two or three rounds and they sort of, you know, not for lack of trying or talent, they sort of fade out of the title picture sometimes. For whatever reason, the pack catches up or they fade in form, team that is, although with Trident, that's probably not going to happen. But anything can happen in the sport, as we know. But yeah, expecting Prema to pick up from here. I'm not going to say Colo Pinto do any better. I don't want to put that jinx on him. But yeah, we'll get a much different picture in the coming months with regards to the title picture. I think, though, what we saw in Melbourne from a racing point of view, they got to come back because, you know, there were a lot of instances where they were three or four wide, and most of the time when they were doing that, they weren't killing each other, which was, you know, doubly good. Although I would like to have seen some better racecraft from some of these guys because it just seemed that they couldn't go two or three laps sometimes without someone smashing their gearbox into a barrier. And a lot of time it was just, you know, not leaving space, a wheel on the grass, just very basic errors. So, you know, would like to see that improved, you know, going forward. But I guess that's just part and parcel of having, you know, 16, 17 year olds coming into a championship, into a track where they get 45 minutes practice, but at the very least, they're not doing what two drivers in a certain team in Formula 2 are doing, where despite having a lot of money and backing behind them and one driver having a lot of experience, and they're still proving that they're, you know, they're two people that shouldn't be given paddock passes into an F4 paddock, let alone anywhere near a Formula 2 car.
No strong opinions there. I have no idea who you're talking about. And rather than...
No, not at all. So as long as this does not get back to Rory Nassani, he'll never know.
Well, rather than dwelling on that, let's move on to Ask FS. That is enough questions from me. And I mean, that's quite a lot of questions as well, because the Feeder Series podcast is for you viewers and listeners. We're going to move on to the hashtag AskFS part of the podcast. If this is your first time watching or listening, you can get involved by using the hashtag AskFS on Twitter. joining our Discord and using the podcast questions channel, commenting on our YouTube videos, or by keeping an eye out for our Instagram posts and stories. Now, caveat, we promoted Alex Jakes joining the podcast with you as a special guest, Josh, because I think we teased a few episodes ago, like I said, how excited you were to have Alex Jakes when Jakes met Josh. So there are some questions.
Before I cruelly let Josh down, let's be honest.
I'll never forgive you for that. But hey, it's all good. We're here now.
Well, there are some questions that people ask, which I do think can carry over to both of you. But these first ones in particular were pretty much solely for Mr. Jakes, who, as we've established, had a tough weekend. So I'm going to whiz through as many as possible. And by doing so, I'm going to basically go through four, which kind of go into the same category. Anjo on Twitter, how do you survive commentating and talking for that long? They're in awe. James Harnden on Twitter, did you get much sleep after the race? Where's Mansbridge on Twitter? Do they have a sleeping area in Biggin Hill? I'm sure you and others needed it this weekend. And Omi via Discord, how was it like doing an all-nighter this weekend at Australia, or when Australia were racing, due to F2 and F1 taking place? And do you think it was a bigger challenge than Japan when you did an all-nighter due to qualifying on Sunday in 2019? So a lot of things all around sleeping and potentially sleeping at Biggin Hill, Alex.
Well, there's lots of questions there. How was it doing it in the middle of the night? Good fun. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that every week, but that was good fun. There is no sleeping area at Biggin Hill, but there's a lovely hotel across the road, which makes life a lot easier. So that was quite good. What were the others?
Did you get much sleep after the race? Was one from James Harnden.
No.
And
no, I went and met my friend's newborn child. So it was about as far away as you could possibly get from sleep. But I was very happy for my mate. So yeah, I've got to go. I went to go and visit him, because we don't get many. The nice thing about it was that you got a full Sunday. So I was exhausted, but got a full Sunday afterwards. And I don't always get many of those.
I have heard that newborn children are very good for sleeping, if you want to get a good night's sleep. But then the final one was Omi asking if this is a bigger challenge than Japan when you did an all-nighter in qualifying on Sunday in 2019. Is that true?
Yes. Oh. So we did a Super Sunday when the typhoon rolled in, and I was doing the pit lane channel. The majority of the team were in Japan. The travel budget had not stretched to the pit lane channel being flown to Japan. So I think I rolled up into what was then the server room in Japan. So I got in at 1 a.m. I think quali started at 2 UK time. But the server room, as it is advertised, had to keep all the servers cool so you could still see the pictures at home. So I was in a coat, hat, scarf, like I was, you know, doing the back row at Rochdale again, like I used to in my junior broadcasting career. And yeah, I was freezing in that server room and loved it still. So it's, you know, it's ridiculous how much I love this job. But that was a long day, especially when the team had taken an interesting approach to getting through the typhoon, which was finding the nearest bar. So that was a terrible broadcast. And I've got fond memories of that.
How fun. And the final two questions around the sleeping and or Australia, I suppose you'd call it, rather than sleeping. Slightly less motorsport mad via Discord. Where does this weekend rank in terms of the craziest weekends you've commentated on? And I am angry via Discord, which is a hell of a username. Other than this F2 weekend, what was the most craziest F2 race, I think they're trying to say, you ever commentated on?
Ooh. And the one that instantly springs to mind with F2 is back when we were calling it GP2 and our first trip to Baku. And how crazy was it? If you're not familiar with the race, it freaked the F1 drivers out. That's how crazy it was. At one point, we had a restart where we went 11 wide, thanks to Matsushita. And it wasn't his fault. It was just that, you know, it was unclear where we were restarting. Where the restart line was back when it wasn't the start finish, back when it was one of the safety car lines. And yeah, it looked like a car park on the way down there. So the line was not clear. And as a result, we went 11 wide at one point. Stoffel Van Dorn, bless him, had gone to a McLaren team briefing, and I was doing that race on my own. And it was like something out of a game show. It was just like something was going off at all times. It was just absolutely ridiculous. So that's the one that springs to mind on the craziest race ever. And what was the Australia question, Jim? It's almost like I'm slightly sleep deprived.
No, it was basically the same thing. Where does this rank on the craziest weekend you've commentated on? It sounds like maybe a little bit below Baku 2016.
Yeah, I think it was crazy. But you know what? I think the great thing is that when Formula One are putting on a first corner like that on lap 57, then I think you know that it's just sometimes you get that at Albert Park, and that's the joy of the venue. So it's just the nature of, and it's quick now. It's much quicker than it used to be. So I think it was crazy. It was chaotic, but you wouldn't want it every week. But as a one-off, I think that was great, great entertainment.
Let me pull you back in a little bit, Josh. This is a question from Kimmy Martinez, hashtag JB17, nice touch, on Twitter. And this is for both of you, but let's go with you first, Josh. I know you probably explode if you can't put your opinions out to the world after 5 minutes. I'd love to know your opinion about the three-race experiment they did in F2 and F3 a couple of years ago, and if you believe that we could go back to that format with some tweaks in the rules of how the grid is formed for each race, the point system, et cetera, et cetera.
I hated it a lot. It was just... I got nothing else to add to it. It's an idea that I'm glad is dead. Irrespective of whether you can tweak it anymore, I honestly don't think the current format needs to be meddled with any more than it already has been. Like, I think we've got a good structure here, you know, qualifying, sprint race, feature race. Do you reverse the top 8, 12 drivers for the sprint race? I think, honestly, you go a bit more overboard than that. You're starting to Hollywood a little bit just for the sake of just guessing some weird, wacky results. I think really we got a good format here. Leave it alone. The when they changed it, it was universally condemned, and no one wants it. No one misses it. No one will ever miss it. So I'm sorry, bloke who answered that on Twitter. No, absolutely not. Do not bring it back and put a damn restraining order on it.
Josh might be speaking for you there, Alex. Maybe you really enjoyed it. I know you probably have to be a bit more careful with your word choice, but are you happy for the current setup that we've got?
I very much enjoy Josh's content, and I very much respect him as a creator and a broadcaster. But I can tell you that Josh does not speak for me at any point of this podcast so that I can continue with my work. It's great to be on the pod with you, mate. I'm only joking. That format was not a winner is the easiest way to put it. Yes. It did allow me, personally, it was quite useful because it did allow me to do one more season of Formula 3 as a commentator, because you can't do 3, 2, and 1 on the same weekend. But because they split it, allowed me to do one final season. And I really enjoyed that final season. So on a personal level, it was useful for that regard, but it was the wrong format. It was the wrong format at the wrong time, and I'm glad it's gone.
I think Josh does speak for everybody then. May I say as well,
yes, Alex, man of the people.
May I say as well then that it's great to see your ascent, but it's going to be, if you do get to the point where everyone, like, we just need you and you can't do anything else, it's going to be a travesty for F2 if you have to walk away. But let's see where you're going.
Well, at some point, someone else is going to have to do it. I can't do F2 for 30 years.
Don't break our hearts.
I mean, Josh, we want you to. Don't say those words, man.
It's not going
to
work.
Don't leave us.
My, you know, my family need to see me at some point of my adult life. So, yeah, no.
I don't know. As an F1 YouTuber, I don't even remember if I have any. I don't even see sunlight anymore.
That's what I brought the sunlight for. This is what the backdrop
is.
That
what it is?
Very good, very good. Geez. Back onto some of the questions. Charlotte Taylor wants to know, well, wishes that you had a good night's sleep. Have you had a good night's sleep? We know that already. No. Which driver do you think we most disappointed with the beginning of their season? We're not seeing many reliability issues, which is great and unusual, but it feels like we're seeing more driver errors. This is for you, Alex. And I suspect, Jim Ensign didn't specify, but I suspect F2.
Yeah. I think Doohan will be, Jackie Doohan will be, I think, very disappointed with his pace to results ratio. I think if we'd had dry sessions all the way through, I think he'd have been on the podium this weekend, potentially twice. I think he had a good ability to overtake 11, which was the best sane place you could pass at. I don't quite know what started happening in F1. Never seen that before at 9 and 10, but brilliant to watch. But yeah, I think they'll trim that DRS zone back. Yeah, so to answer the question, I think Doohan will be disappointed. I think Fittipaldi is getting his chance with Roden Carlin. I think he'll be upset with how it's gone as well. But listen, you've got to forget about it. It's six races. It's a long championship. There's a chance to recover. And everyone's going to be taking points off each other all the way through. You're not going to get a bowl to start winning multiple races. I say Awasa will probably win the next three in a row. and this will get clipped up and replayed at me constantly. But I think Doohan and Fittipaldi are looking for the biggest step forward. And Martins obviously has to start keeping his nose clean, because boy's got an unbelievable turn of pace. Fantastic ability behind the wheel, but can't afford. But you got to remember, it's junior racing and it's his rookie season. So I don't like to be too critical. That's what I leave for Josh.
He's very good at that as well. I was absolutely stunned with how disappointed Jack Doohan sounded after P2 in Jeddah. He's clearly wanting to do so much more. And I'm surprised you didn't bring up Ollie Bearman, who's got 3 points after excelling pretty well. I know he's had some mistakes and stuff, but...
Yeah, no, there's a fair point with Ollie Bearman. Again, it's a similar thing to... almost the table is, unless you're in the top five at this stage, the table is almost irrelevant. Ollie Bearman, like Victor Martins, has got great pace. He's performed alongside... You know, he should have been in the mix for the win in Jeddah. But I would be, if I was Martins and Bearman, I would just be encouraged that, all right, I'm quick in F2. I'm capable of fighting for poles. I'm capable of fighting for victories. It's not gone my way. Let's get in the sim. Let's really push it in the gym, and let's come back to the traditional venues that I know a bit more and turn it round. That's the joy of being in a rookie season. If you look at someone like Doohan's in year two. And you know what the judgment, you know, the further you go, the more seasons you do, might not be fair, but that's how everyone views the championship. And you're not going to change the perception with that being the case. The earlier you win, the more your title is worth, is the opinion of the motorsport world.
Fair enough. And
whether that's right or wrong, that's just what the perception is.
Well, this is... Seriously, after potentially cutting a chunky section about Roy Rissani, which we may or may not have just done, this is from somebody called Noi Rissani via Discord. The question, Alex, is, are you half French?
I'm not half French, no. Although, clearly, with the surname of... Let's be honest, the surname is spelt Jacques. So, it's... There's clearly a family history going back there, but not for hundreds of years. So I am British, to answer that question.
Do you know where the Jake's Jacques comes from?
Not particularly. I think it's Norman for peasant, if you go far enough back. So I think if you go take it right back, I think it means commoner or peasant. But there you go. But yes, the I can say for anyone who's ever wondered, I mean, obviously we, you know, have listeners and viewers from around the world. It's just the anglicization. It's, you know, the example, because funnily enough, it's come up a couple of questions about my surname over the years and why it's spelt the way it is and pronounced the way it is. It's as simple as Thierry Henry. In Britain, he'd be Terry Henry. In France, he's Thierry Henry. In Paris, I would be Alex Jacques. And in London, I am Alex Jakes. There you go. That's the end of that one.
And answers the question perfectly, nice and simple. Josh, you can come back in now. And it's a good question from Nate the Great on Twitter. If you were to rank the F2 Championship seasons, from best to worst. I know that's kind of putting you on the spot. Alex, you've got a few more minutes to think of this, but Josh, how would you rank them? And let's try and think of time. Let's just condense it to the Formula 2 rather than the GP2.
Eons. Yeah, 2017 onwards. The two ones that, geez, there have been some good ones, you know? I think the three that stand out, obviously, is Charles Leclerc 2017, George Russell 2018. It was 18, wasn't it? Yeah, it was, because he debuted in 2019 F1.
Schumacher and 2019, of course.
Was it? Or was it 2020?
Alex, you need to save us here.
What are you doing? Anyway.
Leclerc, Russell, right? And DeFries,
Piastri.
DeFries, man I forget every single time. I'm so sorry, Nick. Sorry, Josh, continue.
He's the most forgotten champion in the most memorable season of Formula 2 for one particular driver who was not the champion of the championship, but he was the champion of the people. But you know, we're not gonna go there. I wanna leave that meme in the past. So the three championships obviously that would rank toward the top is Leclerc 2017, Russell 2018, Piastri 2021. I would say personally, I think it's sentimental value. I think I rank Leclerc's championship as just the top, in my opinion. Russell, Piastri are interchangeable. It's very hard to sort of pick between those two. Some could argue that, you know, but I mean, there'll be people who say, oh, this grid wasn't strong, that grid wasn't strong, but I mean, yeesh. A lot of these guys can drive a car. Like, one thing that humbles you for sure is when you go up against some of these guys, even if it's in a sim, you go up against some of these guys and you just know how fast even like the back markers, if you want to call them that, are. So, yeah. You know, like, and I mean, DeVries's championship got a lot of stick because people say, oh, it wasn't a strong grid because Latifi was up there and stuff like that. But we're going to ignore where DeVries came from, the plaudits he gets, not from just, you know, F1 pundits, but we're talking about, you know, team managers in the top karting teams and the top racing teams waxing lyrical about him. But bloke on Twitter has got a better opinion. You know, that's how it goes. You know, to sound like you're in the know, you have to go against the grain, apparently. I didn't think, though, that was a particularly memorable season, at least compared to what the three I mentioned were. 2020 with Schumacher, you could really argue that Ilott should have had that season. And there were lots of rumors spread from...
But Alex is still here before you start.
I'm just saying there were lots of rumors with regards to...
Come on, Josh. I've got to do 40 years as F2 commentator. We agreed that earlier.
I'm just saying I'll just say this. Ilott was regarded as someone who should have won the title, was extremely unlucky not to due to certain circumstances, which I will not name and that you will never know about. But if you can read between the lines, you know. So I wouldn't rank that high. I'm not going to go through the entire season, but I would say Russell third, 2018 Russell third, Piastri 2021 second, Leclerc 2017 first. Alex, you got better knowledge than me, so please prove me wrong.
Alex, did you grab a pen and paper to start ranking this, by the way? I did see you scribbling something.
Oh, out. give him a head start. Oh, thank you, mate.
You trapped me in an
echo chamber with no preparation.
Yeah, that's poor old Josh has been fed to the lions here. Okay, let's see if I can get this done before the people fixing my shower continue fixing my shower.
There's no noise. You're good.
Is there no noise? Amazing. All right. Great. There's a huge amount of banging going on 6 feet away. I have no idea how we're getting away with this.
I had a call to prayer happening at the mosque a second ago. You don't hear it, so we're good.
Unbelievable. So I'm going to go with... I hate rating champions, by the way. They won the title. They did the job. They did what they achieved their dream. I really don't enjoy this, but I've been asked a question, so why not? So I'm going to put Leclerc top, by a smidge. Russell second, then Piastri, then De Vries, Drogovic, and Schumacher. There you go.
Yeah, I can buy it. I mean, Drogovic is one, that's what we were talking about, that first year sort of thing and the different expectations, because I think if anyone else,
but I really,
rookie season did a Drogovic would be...
I think that, you know, I really don't like having a go at people's championships. I think the right driver wins every time with Formula 2. I think we got the right champion every year that we held the championship. I think and for what it's worth, I think in 2018 is the best running of the Formula 2 championship of the modern era. I think the standard of driving, to have your top four in the championship as Russell, followed by Norris, followed by Albon, followed by De Vries, I don't think we'll really see anything like that ever again. I remember in Baku, Alex Albon got out the car and he'd won, and he was wide-eyed at how much he'd had to push. He'd never pushed himself that far. And I felt that season, they all just put themselves to delirious levels of competition. And Lando Norris with one hand behind his back, because he never figured out those Pirelli tyres in F2. He never worked out how to do it. And yet he was still able to stay in contention. So it was a dream year, that 2018. That was the best year I've seen in F2.
Yeah, 2018, I mean, with Norris, I mean, he came off of, you know, like, I can't remember the results he exactly got in F4, if he did F4, you know, he came from a wealth of success, especially in the F3 formula, you know?
He won everything, he won everything about F2, so he would have won Formula 4.
I mean, especially McLaren Jr., there was so much expectation going into the season, then he comes in Bahrain and wins immediately. It's like, okay, another championship, and then he never won again. And instead, we had George come through and just absolutely sweep the floor. Which goes back to the Bortoleto thing that we were talking earlier on. Yeah, Bortoleto is doing amazing, but you never know. You never know. There's no sort of set certainty as in, like, oh, he won the first couple of races, therefore the championship set. It's never the case. So,
I'm biased, but Alex, hearing you speak so enthusiastically about the past, I just don't know how you could ever put your family ahead of Formula 2 when you're so excited by it. But in the interest of time, and I mean, we could go about 5 hours like we suggested, but I have to edit this goddamn thing, guys. So in the interest of time, some quicker answers.
That's going to take a while. It's going to take a while, that edit. Good luck to you, Jim.
Chris Hosey via Twitter: is it possible we'll see more international events appearing on the F2 and F3 calendar in future seasons due to the multitude of new venues that are being added to the F1 calendar over the next few seasons? Specifically for you here, Alex.
I think it is absolutely possible that we're going to see, if you consider the amount of places that want a Grand Prix at the moment, I think it's absolutely possible that we're going to see. I think also most events want Formula 2. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant way to spend your weekend if you're in the grandstand. So I think if you're a new event, you would want Formula 2. So I think the possibility of us going to places we've never been to before, very likely.
A Las Vegas finale for Formula 2 is better than an Abu Dhabi finale for Formula 2. That's what I'm thinking. Although you have to be 21 to drink in America, which would be just devastating.
If you're a fan of tire temperature chat, this weekend, my word, are you going to get a lot of it in Vegas? Because it's going to be, we're racing, you know, they're racing at midnight for Formula One. So it's going to be nothing out there. And it's, you know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. So it's going to be freezing when they're out on track. So yeah, tire temperature chat returns for Vegas. I don't think F2 is ever making it to Vegas. I'm not sure if there's going to be anything other than F1 on track at Vegas ever.
I didn't know it was even Thanksgiving weekend. That is everything crazy that could be about Las Vegas is crazy about Las Vegas. I can't wait to see how it actually looks on television on Saturday, which blows my little brain. But Vishred via Discord: Alex, I'm so, capital letters, so glad you're on F1 TV. I echo these thoughts as well. Actually makes these F1 races bearable. Do you ever use hand signals to cue yourself in over the color commentator? And question number two: would you like to narrate my fiance and I's wedding video?
I love it. Yes, I'm available for weddings. That is an amazing question. That's my favorite question of the pod. Yeah, hand signals. It's not a technical job when you're commentating. Sometimes you've got to jump in. The great thing about the people that I am lucky enough to commentate with is that often they will just start talking. So you don't need to rely on hand signals because they're in the middle of your sentence anyway. But I think we manage to smooth it out. No, in all seriousness, you do use hand signals. When it's crucial, they're going to jump in anyway. When it's like the end that we get in Australia for Formula One, they're going to jump in anyway. But when it's more relaxed, then yeah, someone will put their hand up. Especially if you're in different locations, which is becoming more and more common, then you will get a hand raised into the air or a finger raised into the air that they've got a point to make.
Just completely going against what I said about trying to edit this quicker. Question from me regarding extra info that you get. So I text you over the weekend with regards to the GPS going down in FP1 of 3.
Yeah.
And I knew that you'd one text back during the session, but also Laura Winter got it to you that the GPS was down. How does that work in the commentary box, Big in the Hill and the commentary box? Is there another screen that you have where like a spotter or somebody is sending messages that you might have missed, or is it just something that you have to work on?
That's just the power of WhatsApp. That's just the power of WhatsApp, Jim. No, screen-wise, there's not. I think there's a little bit of a misconception about the array of information that's available. We get timing pages. There are 5 timing pages. There's a driver tracker that's not available for Formula 2 and Formula 3. So for Formula 2 and Formula 3, you get the same 4 pages of information that have been available from the 90s. So page 1 is your sector times and the gaps. Page 2, I don't often refer to, so I can't remember what's on page 2. Page 3 is from race control, all the messages from there. And page 4 is this like ticker of every lap as they go over the line, every single lap that they go over the line. So you can see the order that they're going to complete things in qualifying and such like. So that's what you've got available to you. And then the screen at home that everyone else sees. That is what everyone that you ever hear commentate on Formula 3 or Formula 2 has got in front of them. Formula 1, you get far more. There's more screens. You get a driver tracker. You might get a tire info page, how long the stint length on the tires is. And then each commentator will have their preferred layout. So I like a certain timing page. Jolyn likes a different timing page. DC likes a different timing page, but essentially it's just not too weather. Much more. Sam Collins, he likes anything that I haven't listed. He would listen to that and go, oh, what are you talking about? You've missed out the 17 pages of information that I use. So yeah, that's the joy of it.
A great, great insight. Thank you, Alex. Question which is for you, but Josh, I think you could probably answer a little easier. With how close, this is from Peak Performance, should I say, from Twitter. With how close the field is this year, who do you think will win the FIA Formula 2 title? And you're on mute, Josh.
I know I am, but gave me a chance to think. Even now, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to articulate. I'm trying to think, okay, of all this bunch, who is going to acquire my absolute complete curse that are bestowed upon several people over the past couple of years. You know,
that was
like...
good filling, Josh. That was for a man that's on, you know, editing in post a lot of the time. That was world class filling. I doff the
absolutely
cap.
Hence why I'll never be a commentator. My brain is extremely slow for impromptu
speech. I'm being serious. I'm not being facetious. I know everything I say you sound sarcastic, but like I'm being serious. I loved it. Leave that in. That's staying in the edit. World class.
Okay then. I'll come in for the next commentary for the Baku event. Either that or bring David Valsecki back, because you two are a match made in heaven. So anyways, I think going into the season, I was thinking it was going to be either Tao or Hauger, on the basis that Tao really should have been in contention last year. And that's why I had a bit of a downer on Drugovich's championship, because it was just like, no offense to Drugovich, because Drugovich can drive. It was just that Taya was taken out of the picture a lot of the time by just things beyond his control. Yeah, his qualifying sometimes was just atrocious, and that's why, you know, like, you know, there'll be sometimes concern about where he is in qualifying, but still encouraging start to the year in some aspects. Iwasa's up there, but and Iwasa should be challenging for the title. But I think, you know, in terms of who I think is destined to win the championship, either Tao, you know, who, you know, should have a big chance at the crown this year. But Halga's also got a habit of, you know, having a sort of quiet year, first year in a category, and then coming back and just winning the title. And he's with a good team. He's shown good pace so far, you know, and would be higher up the standings if he wasn't completely biffed by Victor at the restart. But, you know, come see, come saw. It's what happens in the championship. And this is still a long way to go. A lot of things to happen. It's still bloody close in the championship still. Like, I think, you know, part of beyond, you know, the top couple, you have a look at the rest of the standings. It's like, wow, these guys are close. And who knows? We have Maloney may come into the equation later on. And we talk about how Fittipaldi's probably had a bit of a disappointing season. I don't know, like, with the all due respect to Enzo, I've never looked at his potential the same way others did. And I thought he was really going to have his work cut out for him when Zane came in. And Zane's had him on the ropes a lot of the time since then, and he's only going to get faster. There's a lot of things to play out so far this season, which will make it interesting, but to get back to the question that you answered 75 minutes ago, I think it'll be either Tao or Dennis Hauge for the title this year, which means that Ayumu Wass is going to win.
Well, Alex complimented you on world-class filling, and that was a long 5 minutes to say I don't know. So, Alex, are you able to put in an answer, or does that put you in quite a precarious position with your having to be an unbiased commentator?
No, I'm calling the action unbiased, but I can tell you who I honestly thought at the start of the year. So, honestly thought at the start of the year that Tao Pourchaire would win the championship. So I can say that it's not a biased thing at all. That's what I believe with the information that I had from speaking to people in the paddock and looking at the testing times. Bahrain's an outlier, but I thought the experience that he had, third season, he's comfortable. Also, one thing that was really important for him, I think across the course of the whole championship will settle him down, is you got to remember these drivers are raising their own budgets a lot of the time. His budget is entirely being provided by the Sauber Academy. And sometimes budget concerns, you think, well, okay, that's not going to apply for drivers at the front. There was a period of time in 2018, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying now, but Alex Albon didn't think he was going to be at the next race. We talked about how good 2018 was. That year obviously changed his motor racing career. But he did not think he was going to be able to go to the next race.
He's trying to even drive, from what I remember, right? He's looking to go in Formula E.
Yeah, he was looking to go in Formula E, but that wouldn't have even happened if he dropped out of F2 mid-season. So sometimes drivers that you really recognise, and all the conjecture and all the talk last year about Piastri, you know, you're talking about what one thing that's really, you know, they were talking about Alpine, all the money that Alpine had chucked in. Well, the Piastri family chucked in quite a bit of money to go racing all the way up the level. It's not cheap to get to this level of motorsport. And sometimes drivers that you love and drivers that you know the names of are sometimes one round away from not being able to see out the season. And when you consider the talent level on offer, you can see how removing that from Tao gives him the full attention of being on the. So I think that's why I would have picked him in a preseason pod as the driver to beat. And then sweet reality hits. That's what we love about it. I'll tell you one thing I'm certain about. I think this is going to be the best F2 season since 2018. I think we're going to end up with about 15 different winners. I think we're going to end up with a championship that we talk about in many years to come.
Commentator's curse, Ayumu Wasa wins every feature race from here on out. Yeah. Hoopov via Discord. It got me very hyped, by the way, Alex, so I really hope so. Hoopov via Discord, how long is your preparation before weekend? And I've prepared for the podcast, and that's a hell of a lot of prep. And I can't imagine what it's like when you're having to prep for commentary to know the corner names to know who did well before. Do you watch your own highlights reels from the previous years on the F1 YouTube channel or anything?
No, I don't. I've never watched the races back. I don't like that as a tactic. I'll look through the database. I'll look through the stats. I like to do my own notes so that they're my notes, if you like. So you can get given, certainly Formula One, there's a lot of statistical information around. But even with that, I like to form the sentences so it's my voice, it's my register. So there's a lot of rearranging of information and then into a format of notes. The key things that I run off about three pieces of A4 paper. But that's a huge amount of basically Wednesday and Thursday. You're just taking a huge amount of information. You're thinning it down into three pieces of A4 because any more of that. And then the tracks, a lot of the tracks are in as muscle memory now. Mm. I mean, if you've been watching Formula One since 1998, like I have, I could have, you know, you don't need a track map for Australia. You know it. Well, off the
new Australia, you bloody do. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, so they removed the Mickey Mouse chicane and now everyone's overtaking. But also, yeah, in terms of prep, and then obviously it depends. You will rely far more on stats and form and championship tables if you're doing it remotely. If you're on site, you'll have loads of conversations, and that's where the, you know, I saw Zane Maloney in the lift. He's absolutely buzzing. Go bet your mortgage on Zane Maloney, and he goes out at turn one. So but you have far more conversational bits to drop in when you're on site. But that's the nature of modern broadcasting. You've got to be sustainable. I mean, flying to every event is for a broadcaster is going to become increasingly unlikely in the next decade or so. So that balance between some you're doing from a studio and some you're doing on site, you're doing your groundwork when you're on site. That's a vital part of being a commentator.
Fascinating insight. Aaron Pullen on Twitter has a question, which I guess both of you can answer, actually. I'll put it down for you, Alex, but I think both of you can. After the first two rounds of the F3 season, if you had to put money on three drivers making the step up to F2 next season, who would you choose? Josh, do you want me to put you on the spot as well for you into the Lions Den, as Alex mentioned earlier?
I think the more appropriate question is, who do I put money on? Well, who has the money to put on, you know, because it's a huge budget to get to F2, you know?
Huge budget to get F3 from what I've heard.
To get anywhere. I mean, for God's sake, you know, European karting's half a mil, which is just crazy. You know, gone are the days where you just turn up. Where some people would put a damn cart in their station wagon and they go out and race. Can't do that anymore. You now need a trailer, a crew, an engineer, you know, and all kinds of friggin' equipment in the trailer to help you, I don't know, either win the world championship or get a dial-up modem, which would help you get a faster connection to Henry Kissinger's bathroom or whatever the hell you need to get up there. And we've seen exploits even before this craze happened, you know, like some of, I won't say who, but, you know, richer, you know, people in karting, you see the budgets they have. It's just like tens of millions on the path to Formula One. That is absolutely incomprehensible to anybody that lives in the peasant world, i.e. us.
The Jakes world, from what we've learned of its origins.
in the Jakes world. so three drivers to make the step up to Formula 2 next year. I guess in the case of someone like a Boganovic, you know, it depends on where he finishes this year. If Boganovic is champion or vice champion, he's going up, you know. Anything less, he may stay for another year and try and win the title. You have a look at, Pepe Marti or Franco Colapinto. Do they have the budget to get up to Formula 2? You know, I mean, I reckon that some of the, I mean, Marti and Colapinto should be having the backing to be able to be free, to be without worrying about any of that, to go up because their talent warrants that. But as we know, it's not always as clear cut and dry as, you know, as that in motorsport. Gabriele Mini, I would say. I'll put in Gabriele Mini. Gregoire Saucy And yeah, you know what? Actually, I will go with Dino Boganovich because I think he will be high enough up in the standings where he may feel confident enough to go up to F2, especially if Vesti were to move on at the end of the year.
Good shout. Very good point. Alex, same question. Three drivers. You've had a bit more time to think about it, but surprisingly, Jack O'Sullivan's name wasn't mentioned there, which surprised me a lot, Josh.
I'm going to dip out of this one purely because I don't want to tell anyone in that field that they can't make Formula One.
We're not saying there's only three drivers it can make. It could be 20.
I think that I really don't want to put it. I mean, they're young as well. I don't want to put a label on who's gonna make it and who's not. Also, you know, to make it, they're gonna have to go into F2. So I think I'm gonna dip out of that one.
I completely understand. This question's from Stein, DH1 Supremacy, both Discord. Your commentary on the F1 Esports final lap at Austin last year was so great. Do you practice those kind of lines or is it all improv?
I can tell you that is all improv. No, good fun doing esports. No, you just get yourself into a world of trouble if you think of lines in advance, because then you're trying to remember what the line is rather than looking at what's happening on circuit. So I don't think that that's the right route to go on. And that's a lesson that I found out. You know, occasionally you will think, right, when Lewis Hamilton was going to tie Michael Schumacher's win record, I was thinking in advance all day, like, what am I going to say? It's a big moment. And then he tied it. And I was thinking more about what was I going to say? And trying to remember bullet points rather than look at the moment, look at the pictures, commentate to the moment. There might be a huge crowd noise. They might all be on their feet. There might be a sea of air horns. There might be, you know, he might really be pumping his fist as he comes across the line. Those are the moments that you're going to use to puncture the points of the fact. So it has to be improv. It has to be of the moment and it has to reflect it. You can't imagine if you'd scripted the finale of 2021 in Abu Dhabi. Imagine if you had your thing that you were going to say for Max Verstappen and the thing that you were going to say if Lewis Hamilton was the history maker. None of it would have been reflected with the reality that we ended up in. None of your prep could ever get near the moment. So you have to stay in the moment and you have to improv it.
I don't know how comfortable I am with hearing the word scripted and Abu Dhabi finale at the same time as going into a whole world that I don't want to go into in the comments. Let's move on to this one from CA Parfait 16 via Discord for you, Josh, because it's a question to the mystery guy. What is the dream race car you wanted to drive the most? Can select any series in any era. Now, I know you're going big on your iRacing rather than going in anything with the real cars, but if iRacing had any championship, any car, what would be your pick to race in?
Are the touring car? No way. Nah. I'm not going that stupid. I think, you'd want, obviously, you know, fun, just the most pure race car ever. I was thinking of Maserati 250F, but I heard about how you drive those cars, and basically you pretty much drive it with the throttle and drifting the whole thing around, which back then, when not all of the track was tarmac and there were no barriers to speak of, would have been terrifying. And hence why when people, you know, disparage the older generations just because they're in black and white footage, I just crease. Respect the older generations. Respect your elders. But I think really what I would love to drive, dream race car for me, probably the 98T Lotus. 1986 Lotus F1 car that Senna and Dumfries drove. And the reason I say that is because you turn the boost up in qualifying mode, and then all of a sudden you've got 11 million brake horsepower behind you. You are sort of steering with the throttle, but it is just so pure. There's not much else going on there other than you're trying to hold on to the damn thing, manual gearbox as well. And especially around Brands Hatch, you watch any of those guys back in the 80s with those turbocharged monsters in qualifying mode with the boost all the way up, going around Brands, dancing the thing around. It's just like, that is... it's crap racing because you can't pass there. But it's just like you look at it, and as especially as a racing fan or someone who's into driving, and you're like, I want to drive that thing. It'll scare the crap out of me, but I want to drive that thing.
I'm all for the British Grand Prix, a qualifying lap at Brands, and then the race at Silverstone, which has turned into a fantastic track for racing. I don't know how fair that would be, but that'd be the way to do it.
Actually, no, I would argue probably you. When it comes to alternating circuits, yeah, Silverstone in there, but we really want to extract the most out of driving potential over one lap. There's only one answer to that question.
In the UK?
Knockhill.
Knockhill. Oh, yes. F1 at Knockhill.
It's technically in the UK.
It's very much is in the UK for the moment. That's going way too political. This question from Ernardo Flonzo via Discord. Which circuit has the worst commentary box? I'm guessing you want to keep away from F1, Alex, but maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to throw somewhere under the bus. I don't know.
Ooh, I like that one. Where is the worst commentary box? Probably the worst commentary box is my favorite commentary box, which sounds counterintuitive, but just Monza, there's not much in the way of floorboards in the Monza commentary box, and the wiring is very, very interesting, what they've put in here, because it's sticking out of the walls. So that's not ideal. And it's my favourite one of the year because it's in the old grandstand. It's in the Art Deco old grandstand on the old start-finish line, and I love it, but that's absolutely the worst one. Like, they come on, guys, I just want a floor. I'm looking at where I'm standing on. It's
you're
truly,
in Italy.
Truly weird.
Just take the experience.
Exactly. Where is Monaco? They're tiny. But the winner would be sadly not going there anymore. Sadly was a word I used in the sentence, but it might not be true. Le Castellet. You could only see straight ahead. You had a tiny window. You couldn't fit more than three people in the box, which is a nightmare if you need more than three people in the box. And you weren't on the pit straight. You were just in a random piece of tarmac. But I'm reliably informed that the worst commentary box that Formula One has ever used was at the Indian Grand Prix, where you didn't have a window and it wasn't anywhere near the pit straight. It was just plonked in the middle of the circuit. So thankfully, they've not gone down that route. Otherwise, why would you be there? Because especially with F2, you need to be able to look out the window in the pit stop window. That is vital. So yeah, Le Castellet, the worst one that I had to put up with.
And not anymore. Let's whiz through these two questions. I think you answered this one last time, actually, Josh. So Alex, Ashley by Discord, what is your favorite type of cheese?
Now we're into the real stuff.
Serious stuff.
Now we're into
favorite
the real
type of
stuff.
Cheese.
Thank you. Favorite goodness. Type of you know, cheese. This is what I was promised when I came on the cheese chat. My favorite
the
type of cheese.
Questions.
Exactly. The vital stuff. My favorite type of cheese is any type of cheese. So that's what I'm going for. But if I had to pick one, any blue cheese, I am a massive fan of that. And yeah. Anything of that description, I'm a fan of. But I don't want to be harsh to any of them. Is there a bad cheese? Is there a bad cheese?
Not two drivers of cheese.
Oh my god! How do we get cheese? To a point where we're roasting cheese on the Feeder Series podcast? And yeah, then you came right. And you came out and said your favorite one was the one that's made up and left in a cave for a month.
Oh, whoa!
Yeah, exactly.
Blue cheese
exactly.
Slander.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's blue cheese. So the answer is blue cheese. But you tell me a bad cheese, and I'll tell you that you're wrong.
Bad cheese? My humor?
Did you answer it before, John?
No, to be honest with you, I will mock the fact that blue cheese was made by accident by being left in a cave. But, you know, still, you can't. can't really beat the damn thing. You know, Jakesy spot on there. You can't beat the blue cheese.
It is good.
It is. So there's your answer. You're not going to get any in-depth analysis as to why I think Bortoleso will end up, you know, fading into the stock car Brazil steam. You're not going to hear about what I reckon is the future for Rafael Villagomez, or why I think some certain corners will be reprofiled on the Albert Park circuit. But you do know that blue cheese is goated, so at least we have that.
That's why people tune in.
That is why I came on the pod. No, oh, what another one? A question that isn't about cheese.
Well, this one I know Josh will be very excited to hear. And Alex, last time you were on, you mentioned about a selfie, but RCXPH via Instagram, favorite memories of doing commentary with Davide Valsecchi without the mid-race selfie, if we can exclude that one. You've given that answer before.
Davide used to have to wear, for Skyclee, has to wear Sky uniform. I still think they do. I think they wear polo shirts with the logo on. Most other channels now, you just wear whatever you like. As we've seen from certain people's dress sense, but I'm not going to name names. But anyway, so Valsecchi would always have to do a mid-race outfit change when he used to do the podium interviews. I don't know if you remember that. Back in the day, we'd send Davide at the end and go and do the podium interviews. So we're talking early days. But one time he'd totally forgotten, and we were getting to the end of a barn burner of a race. It was absolutely incredible. And I was like, can you believe it? And I turned to him, and he's just in his boxers, just in the side of the combox, full Anchorman, right? And he's putting a shirt on, and he's doing that. Anyway, the sound guy doesn't hear Davide pick up, assumes there's a problem with mic number two, comes in, and it is full Anchorman. Davide's getting changed. Right, and I'm going at it, and I could just see on the Convox cam, he's just like open the door and slowly close the door for the alternative reality, and there you go. And
I don't know how that wasn't the story last time. That is outrageous behavior, which you could only.
I do want to throw poor old Davide under the bus because he had no other choice. Because you can't go into a world feed with your channel's branding, so he had to change it. But then. I think they'd brought in like the Sky logo on the trousers. I don't know. It was a whole thing. It was absolute chaos. But yeah, we went full Anchorman for one race.
I'm so glad that wasn't at the Indian Grand Prix because that would have been extremely too close for comfort for you guys. But what an anecdote to end things on. People have to listen to the end. But for now, I have to say that is all the time we have this week. Thank you to everybody for watching and listening. Thank you to our editor, Jim Kimberley, for having to edit this very long podcast. But that's what you get when you have two people who I'm very well known for talking their socks off. If you'd like to have your question asked on a future episode, use the hashtag AskFS on Twitter. Drop any questions below if you're watching on YouTube and respond to our Instagram stories or posts. Or let us know what questions you have on your mind on our Discord. Look for the podcast questions channel. And if you are watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment and subscribing to the channel all really helps us out. Doesn't it, Josh? Josh nods along. If you are listening, yeah, very good for an audio podcast. Thanks, Josh. That was brilliant. The tee up that I really wanted and the send off we got.
They can envision the scene.
If you are listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more Feeder Series insight and follow Feeder_Series, FS Americas, and Feeder Series Now on Twitter. You can find the links to all of that, plus the Twitter accounts for myself and everyone else on the podcast in the YouTube description or podcast show notes. Until next time, we have been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.